This is QuakeCast 62.
So in this episode, we are very pleased to welcome John Romero, who is co-founder of id Software, co-creator of Wolfenstein 3D, Doom, and Quake.
Wait, dump truck. Do we really need to go over all of these credits for John Romero? I mean, everybody knows who he is, right?
Well, maybe not the youngins out there, but... Now, John has been involved with game development since he was 11 years old. And so he's a master, right? He's one of the masters of Doom. So, but his latest game is Empire of Sin, which is on Microsoft Xbox Game Pass.
And, hey, you can play it right now if you have Game Pass, which is really cool.
And also, I believe, I'm sure it's on Steam as well for purchase. Mm-hmm. So Empire of Sin is kind of like a gangster game, which just sounds really cool.
Yeah, you can play as Al Capone.
Nice. That's awesome.
Well, Dump Truck, the funny thing about having John Romero on today is the fact that this has it's almost become a joke for him to be on the show. We do the next show, we'd say, hey, we're coming out with another show. And everybody would joke, oh, is it John Romero? Well, this time, it is John Romero.
What we usually do is we ask people, well, how'd you hear about Quake? But we kind of know how you came into Quake.
Yeah, it's different.
But I will say... So John, I'm 53, so I was in my 20s when the game came out, and I met quite a few friends on the Long Beach Duango server before Quake came out. Yeah, so Duango was something that was a really huge part of my life. I played a lot of Doom 2 on Duango.
Hell yeah!
So that was so awesome. So yeah, I met lifelong friends, and we would have Quake parties. We didn't even call them LAN parties. We had Quake parties when Quake came out.
You know the Duango.exe program? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wrote that.
I know. I think I recall you being deeply involved with creating that.
Yeah, as soon as I found out, Key and Bob contacted me and we talked about it and I checked it out at home, I was like, I want this to happen right now. So I immediately, started working on that at night with them, just making sure that it was going to be really great because I wanted to play people randomly at 3 a.m. and not have to call somebody, like on the phone. Hey, can you deathmatch? Just get into a lobby.
Right? Yeah. And for people listening, what Duango was just an easy, and I say air quote, easy way to get your modem. It actually was pretty easy. You'd get in a small chat room that was, VGA and, with yellow, blue, and, with white text. It was very rudimentary, but you were able to chat, you were able to ready up, and then it would sync all the servers for you. It was a beautiful thing. So yeah. Really kind of way ahead of its time. And then, Quake came along and boom.
Internet, doors on yep.
RC, what should we ask John Romero? We've got the man, the icon of sin here.
Oh man, where to start here, John? There's so much to cover. One of the things that really was at the forefront of my mind and something that was more recent that I kind of wanted to get your take on was how Bethesda, and therefore id Software is now a part of Microsoft. What was your reaction to that?
I thought it was great. What a great home to be in, versus ZeniMax, which is, just an investment company that was, collecting game companies to try and sell big, which they did. And that was the goal. But Microsoft, is, the Xbox divisions that are to make games, and they've been doing it for a long time. And it was funny because Microsoft wanted to buy id back in the day. And so now they finally did it.
I'll get you one day, my pretty, right?
Yeah, that's basically.
That's very cool.
That is cool. And I assume that it's got to have something to do with, Microsoft now being, at least from my point of view, they've been very, very gamer-centric lately, like with Game Pass and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I noticed that one of your more recent games, actually, I think it's your most recent game, is actually on Game Pass, right?
Yep. Yeah. And it was amazing because the player numbers just went nuts when we got on Game Pass. It was excellent.
Are you working on DLC, or is that, has that been released?
Yep.
Oh, okay. So you're still working on that. Cool.
Yep.
Cool. And, wow. Yeah. So now I have not played Empire of Sin, but I know it was kind of Brenda's, baby, and then it's like a family affair, and the whole gang jumped in there. It was, I just saw the Jaffe interview yesterday.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. You guys had a blast and really great stories and everything.
Yeah. 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 We have, the DLC coming out this year. So when it comes out, I mean, there's a lot of really great additions to the game, but the DLC is going to be pretty cool when it hits. A lot of really good buzz. So we're excited to get it out there.
Awesome.
Nice. Yeah. Awesome. And one of the other things I was thinking of too, is, you know, when you guys announced this game coming, I saw the reactions from people because, you know, for some reason, John, your name is synonymous with FPSs. I don't know why, but
yeah, it's weird. What's up?
Yeah.
I know.
So when you announced this game though, everybody had like kind of a weird reaction to it, you know, but you know, what was that like for you, you know, seeing the reaction to this announcement?
Well, I mean, I knew that. That's obvious. But the funny thing is before it did, and even after, you know, after Ion Storm, I've made tons of other kinds of games, you know, like one of the biggest games that I've ever made is a Facebook game.
Right.
Right.
You know, massive game. So yeah, I've done, you know, even id Software, before we made, you know, Wolfenstein, you know, we made puzzle games and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I'm just used to making all kinds of different things. And then bam, we made the shooter, and then we made a bunch of shooters. And then later on, I worked on a lot of things. I even worked on an MMO for 4 years.
Right.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, I mean, and you're like, I remember back in the day when you guys were white, you know, id was white hot, and, you know, Doom was out, and Quake was out, and everybody, like all my pals, all my gamer buddies were just like, can you imagine just sitting around, and I know this is not what you did, but this was our perspective. Can you imagine like sitting around the office deathmatching all day long? You know, and I work nights, and we grabbed Doom 2, and it was a Mac network, actually.
Oh,
and we,
cool.
We bought the Mac version of Doom 2. All of us did, and, you know, networked late at night at work. We were pretty naughty, but it was awesome times. But well, I wanted to ask you about, because I don't really hear people ask this of you, you know, Quake wasn't what you had first imagined it. You guys had to, you had that meeting in 95 where you said, okay, we're doing a shooter, gonna, you know, throw all the ideas out. What would Quake, what would that feel like and be like if you had had your way? Like if you had been able to do it, what would that resemble? What would that feel like?
I think it was maybe in 2007. I can't remember if it was 5 or 7, but when Darksiders came out, I was like, oh my God, that's it.
Oh, wow.
Like, that's what we would have done.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think I even posted about it. I was really excited when that game came out, because I was just like, that's what we would have been concepting, you know, just trying to see if the game would have, you know, if that would be a way to make the game, you know, to if it felt good and everything. But it was more like looking forward to game design exploration with that full 3D engine and those original ideas to see if it actually felt good. So yeah, we just, you know, the team wasn't in the headspace to do that at the time, but Darksiders, when it came out, I was just like, wow, that was it.
That's great to hear. Cause I've definitely have not played that. So I got to check that out, because that would be fun to kind of, you know, imagine the alternate universe where I'm playing Quake the way it's supposed to be. But I mean, you know, it's ironic because, you know, we're very aware as fans that, you know, Quake was difficult. It was a troubled kind of development, kind of, you know, destroyed, didn't destroy it, but it was an end of an era, I think you said before. And, but, you know, I was talking to my wife, and we've been in the entertainment industry. We've worked on movies and things, and I know it's not the same as crunch, but it is kind of soul crushing hours and a lot of egos and a lot of tension and a lot of stuff. So did you, like, when Quake was finished, were you so excited to just be out of there that it didn't affect you? Or was it kind of hard to, you know, bounce back from almost, you know, what, 7 months of crunch time? Like,
The funny thing about the crunch is that it was 7 days a week. You know, it was like 12 hours, usually 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. And, you know, I think I took 2 weeks off after we launched. And then when I came back, I created the retail masters for the CDs that they wanted to put, you know, the locked versions of our games on the CD and everything that everyone cracked immediately. They wanted to put that, you know, that was going to be the Quake CD. So I mastered those things. And when I, you know, like after I left, it was like, it was really weird because I'd been there for years and that I was excited about starting this new company and working with Tom again, because Tom was super fun. He's positive. Mm-hmm. You know, like he was excited to be able to do that as well. But it was also sad that I was leaving, but like had just come out with a really great game. And so that's good to leave on a note like that. But it was sad that I left, you know, see, it was really weird because it was like two things at one time. Luckily I didn't just jump right into working immediately on another game. It was basically investigating the possibilities. And I remember after my plan note, you know, that I posted basically saying that I'm leaving, the very next day, Tim Sweeney and I think Mark Rain flew to my house, and they came over to convince me to come over and, you know, to Epic, and they stayed the night at my place and everything.
Oh, wow.
And then like 2 days later, Activision flew us out to Beverly Hills, and, you know, we stayed in like the most expensive room at the Beverly Wilshire. And it was pretty crazy. So it was a lot of really crazy stuff happening. But it was sad that it ended up that way. And, you know, it was just, you know, one of the toughest things about that meeting in 1995 was the fact that the people who were on either on the fence or on my side were the people who founded the company and had been through multiple entire game dev cycles. And the people who were just broken had never done that at the company yet. So it was like the inexperienced people are the ones who, you know, were not ready for, like, you know, like what it takes when you're doing R&D in a brand new space like that. But the rest of us have been doing R&D for years, so we were used to it. So yeah, it was just a weird time. I think Carmack just didn't want me in the company. So, you know, that's probably one reason why he didn't jump on my side.
Right. So he kind of put his foot down and said, "Hey, we're doing a shooter, and that's it. This is
He said he's on the fence. Yeah.
Oh,
he was on the fence, and then it was just like, well, you know, if this is the way it is with everybody not being on the same side, we have to go with what the easiest thing is that this team can execute. Right. We can't spend even more time doing R&D. We need to just actually make something and get it done. So that means a shooter.
was there any talk of like, well, why don't we just do a Doom 3 and just put this on the shelf and, you know, wait, you know, delay it? Because there's delays all the time now. But
yeah,
back then you were trying to hit the holidays.
It was delayed.
Right.
I mean, Quake was already delayed. Yeah, I remember Carmack really wanted it to ship for Christmas of 95, I think, but there was no way because the engine wasn't even close. Right. And we would not have done a Doom 3 because we'd never done a 3. We've always done a sequel, boom, next game. Yeah, and the sequel was always the retail version of the game. So the first thing that we put out is the shareware version. Sequel is retail, boom, next IP. So we wouldn't have done a Doom 3. And I don't know when we ever would have, if I had stayed at the company, we would have probably still kept on making brand new stuff after a sequel.
Man, it's wow. Yeah, know, just, it's wow. So funny what to hear as a fan. Yeah, what could have been, or but hey, you know, things work out the way they're supposed to. So, but so oh, John, yes. So John, I have a Discord, or I'm part of a Discord called, which is a Quake Mapping Discord, and we focus on helping new people get into mapping and tutorials. And we forgot to tell you that I have a YouTube channel with tutorials for Quake mapping and, you know, miscellaneous stuff. And then, but RC, tell them what you have, like, what, almost 300 episodes of a Quake kind of episode.
Yeah, I just do Quake playthroughs user created maps and that kind of thing. We're almost on episode 300 at this point. Yeah, we do Let's Plays for that, and been doing it for quite a while, obviously. But yeah, it's been amazing to see what everybody has been creating, even over the course of the past 10 years. Have you been kind of keeping up on what the users have been creating out there for Quake?
Well, not the early stuff, but obviously Arcane Dimensions is like was pretty cool. There are other groups out there making some really cool stuff that I'm looking at. But I don't spend a lot of my time, looking at user levels, just because I have so much stuff happening constantly every day,
right?
You know, it's crazy. And it's basically like that for years, you know, 'cause it's like, if I'm not doing one thing, it's like I'm trying to make something else. I'm trying to create another game, or I'm trying to do something like that, putting something out. I haven't, but I know that when something like Arcane Dimensions comes out, and when I see the screenshots, you know, of it, I'm just like, that looks so good. You know, it's too bad we couldn't have made that when we put Quake out, you know, the first time.
Right.
But it's there's just no way. There's so much work just making the game, you know, trying to define what it's going to be, because Arcane Dimensions and everybody else's stuff is based on what Quake 1 was, but Quake 1 wasn't anything when we were starting to make it, you know. So we had to define that aesthetic, and, you know, then people can just like take what we made as a very, very base, crude aesthetic and really do something amazing with it and design stuff that's just looks like you want to be there, you know? I love mapping. I mean, mapping is, that's, you know, made the first 3D maps in games.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
And
crazy.
And the editors, you know, writing the editors for them. But Doom Builder 2 is amazing as well. I know this is a Quake thing, but
sure.
Even that editor for making maps is amazing and just blows away the Doom editor that I wrote.
Yeah, there's some really crazy tech, you know, out there. I'm sure you've seen Trench Broom.
No, that's the best. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, and that leads me kind of to the other question. I want to, you know, put you on the spot or what have you, but I know you did Sigil, and it was, you know, fantastic and extremely hard. Thank you. There's a lot of overlap with the Doom and Quake community. A lot of people come over from Quake, you know, or from Doom, the Doom mapping community, to the Quake community. So there's plenty of overlap, but
it's time to grow up, son.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you know what, honestly, to me, what I love about it is you're talking about defining Quake and the feeling of it. The games do feel so much different. I mean, they really do. You've got so much atmosphere and it's much spookier. Sound plays a bigger role, lighting, and especially lighting. That's my favorite aspect of it.
Yeah.
So, and then the modern stuff is even more powerful, you know, it takes, you know, ambient occlusion and all that stuff. So there's some really cool stuff that's been going on for 25 years. Now I'm going to kind of mention this. I hope I don't anger you, but Brenda did post on Twitter years ago a screenshot of Trench Broom and a map. We don't exactly know who was making that map, but we were suspecting it might have been you. So is there any possibility there might be something for Quake in the future?
You know, it's funny. I think that what that was me loading a Daikatana map.
Hey, it's supported. You can make maps for it.
But I know, but it was loading a level that isn't out there. It's not a Daikatana level.
Oh,
it was made for Daikatana, but never was in the game. and to just to see like if it would load up, you know. And of course it's referencing textures that were never in the game,
right?
So it can't actually like draw good looking stuff, but I think that's what that was. Trench Boomer's really great. I really like playing around with it, and it's something I'm definitely interested in.
Very cool. Well, we'll be all ears if you decide to do something, even if it's just a deathmatch map. Now, have you checked out the Quake re-release at all? Did you see, like, have you fired that up?
I didn't run it. I think I got it, but I didn't run it. I think what they did was, didn't they just update the Steam version of Quake that was out there?
Yes. Correct. Yeah. So if you have it, you already have it.
Yeah.
It's just another executable, like a radio button you press and say, you know, go for the re-release. Well, what they did was really tastefully done. You know, they used Kex as a wrapper so that they could do localization and a couple other kind of modern gamey things. But it's pretty cool. You know, you could jump in and do co-op really quickly. It's so much better than, you know, the alternatives, much easier and everything. And then there's a brand new episode, which is Dimension of the Machines. And we interviewed those guys in our last episode. And really fun stuff. Like, you want to see some really high-end kind of Arcane Dimensions stuff. Like, definitely worth your time.
Nice.
Yeah, so good stuff.
Yeah.
I know Death Jam is coming up. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but the person who connected us is Saul Brox. Sal Brox. He is, I believe, in Dublin, and he was pinging me today saying, "Hey, don't you have the interview?" So he hooked us up with Brenda, and Brenda got us the interview. So thank you, Saul Brox. He says that he can't wait to get his ass kicked in DM7, or not, hopefully not DM7 this time. So he kicked
seven.
His ass.
I love 7.
Yeah, that's a crazy. So now, did American McGee make that one? Or
yeah, well, or what, yeah. So what happened is American started that map, you know, while we were making Quake, when we were kind of near the last probably 2 months. I think 2 months before we shipped, because American wasn't there the last month. So he had made a piece of a map, and what the map was basically just the four walls of the outside walls with water and the center cube, and all, you know, not much else, just some platforms. But so it was like the idea of what this could be. And then I think that, what is his name? I think it's Misha the Sled Dog, Elliot. Yeah, his name is something Elliot, J.D. Elliot or something like that. I think he may have finished that map. And it was just classic, you know. And the other level that we play a lot in the office is Corpse Yard 2A, CY2A, that Tom Hall made while he was at Iron Storm.
It is such
a good map. Oh my God. It's, you just got to play it. It has so much secret stuff in it. It's really simple. It's two floors, basically. It's two levels, lots of airspace, lots of rocket jumping everywhere. And it's, you know, it's amazing, just the cat and mouse crap that goes on in that level. It's not like DM7, because with DM7 you can just destroy somebody as soon as you control it. You know, like you just are sitting in the center, and just like you hear where the spawn is, and they're dead basically, because it's everything that's kind of around you. CY2A isn't like that. Like, you can totally hide. You can like spawn and hide. You can run. You can like go underneath the place. It's you just got to try it out. It's got invulnerability and invisibility and all that stuff. The quad is like the coolest thing to get, but so you're just in the most, you know, the worst place to get it, because everyone will just destroy you if you try to get it. But it is a really great one-on-one map. You know, for not, you know, for free-for-all, it's insane. One-on-one, it's really fun.
Yeah, and I think I heard you say that you kind of gravitate towards kind of a one-on-one type of matches.
Always.
In it. That's kind of my kind of thing too. And it's weird. I did make a map a long time ago called Rubicon, and it was kind of just super rudimentary. I wasn't much of a mapper. This was back in the 90s, but I thought I did a pretty good job. I'm gonna send it your way. Just you don't, no obligation, no obligation, but I will send it your way for Def Jam, or I'll send it to Sol Brox or something. But
I think that was a song by Journey.
Yeah. Really cool. Yeah. There's all kinds of names for that one. No, that's really cool. I love how passionate about you are about, you know, death matching and how you still do it.
CY2A. At our office before COVID happened, every day at lunch, many people played Quake Deathmatch free for all.
Nice. Like
every day for years. And then on Thursday nights, I would have a 3-hour tournament with my lead programmer, who is better. Like he's like one of the best in Ireland. And he's so much fun. And I just scream at him. Just scream. It's the only time I ever scream is playing Deathmatch with him at night, you know, in the office. And I mean, screaming. Like we have a chair covered in all the shit that I say that's just written all over the chair. It's so funny. Well,
Let's hear a sample. What's a sample?
You know what? You have a video of it.
Oh, cool.
Brenda records me doing it. That's funny.
Hilarious.
Oh man. I've definitely thrown my mouse across the room plenty of times. I never talk trash because I suck. I mean, the only game I was remotely good at in multiplayer was Soldier of Fortune 2, because we played the hell out of it. And then when I went back to Quake 3 with the rail, I never even used the rail before, and I realized, why am I so good with the rail? And it was because I had been playing SOF2, where you have like kind of not pixel perfect, but you had like location damage as opposed to hitbox.
You know, so the thing about Soldier of Fortune, I love that game, but the one thing about the game that broke it, even though I loved it and I played the entire game and beat it and everything, the thing that broke the game, at least in single player mode, is when you peek around a corner, they can't see you and you can just see everything. Right. Like you stick your head around the corner and you can see all this stuff and none of the enemies can see you. It's as if you never actually move, but somehow your eyeballs are invisible and they're going around the corner and you see everything and you can shoot people, but they can't see you. It just makes the whole game so easy. So yeah, I just like basically, it is. And it was built in. It wasn't like a cheat that you installed. It was just the peek around the corner was the broken part of the game that made it really easy. But it was great. I loved the whole ghoul system that they put in there.
Oh yeah, it was spectacular. I mean, it just brought it up to the next level. But I really enjoyed the briefcase, you know, multiplayer, and we played the hell out of that thing.
Nice.
But we played a hell of a lot of Quake. Like I said, we know. And it's funny, RC and I both kind of started off in the 90s playing multiplayer, because that was really where the game really, you know, the single player was great and very moody and atmospheric. But back then, there kind of wasn't as big a scene as there is now for mapping single player. Yep. So multiplayer was really the focus, Rocket Arena and all that.
And you could get maps done pretty quick for multiplayer too.
Yeah.
Exactly. Single player takes a long time.
Exactly. It's a commitment. Yeah, definitely. Yep. And so it's totally topsy-turvy now, because we do have, you know, hardcore people in Europe, and there are a few communities like in the Southwest and Southern United States where there are communities, but there's not that many people playing multiplayer, hardcore, like Quake World kind of stuff. So now it seems like there's way more people playing single player, which is weird.
Wow.
But
Have you heard of Lord Lame?
Lord Lame? No, I don't think so.
He streams Quake Deathmatch every single day for years.
Oh, I'm gonna do. I'm gonna
He's gonna be at the Death Jam.
Oh, perfect!
The best player. He, like, the people that are like legendary to us when they come and play, and they just kill everyone. They bunny hop everywhere, like stuff like that. Lord Lame wipes them down. It's crazy. I can't wait. It's just fun watching these people. They bunny hop from a standstill, like it's instant. That's so weird. Wow. And then having those, you know, having people who are that good facing off against each other, it's like a real, you know, it's a real esport.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's one of those things, like, it feels like you know, Doom is the same way. Quake, they have just such tight controls. You, like you say, like you've said, the second to second kind of moment to moment gameplay.
Yeah.
You guys just nailed that. Like you could sit down and play Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers, and it still feels awesome. It doesn't feel like you're playing an old, it's just you're playing a classic, and that's how it feels with Quake, you know?
Yeah.
It's just classic. You could, if it was just polys on the screen, it would still be awesome. You know, just ugly, nasty polys.
Well, yeah, you know, the gameplay is really good because when esports started, people would postage stamp their screens and make the bitmap as garbage as possible just for the FPS.
Right.
You know, like right. It didn't matter what it looked like. It, what mattered was that gameplay. You know,
they get that extra frame per, like one tiny frame per second or something.
Yeah, well, you know, it's really, what's funny is one of the guys that is extremely hardcore, he brings a CRT to the these tournaments because look at he has a laptop and the laptop has a built-in screen. He plugs in a VGA CRT into his laptop and the VGA screen is smoother than the built-in LCD.
Wow. Yeah,
which gives him faster reaction time because he's showing us he's just moving left and right and the CRT is just smoother than the built-in screen. Unbelievable. Huh. And so he has better reaction because he can see it, the reaction faster on a CRT. We're talking like, you know, 70 frames versus 60 frames.
Right.
But yeah, it's pretty crazy. But he uses a ball mouse from the 90s.
Oh, he does.
A Logitech ball mouse and a CRT, and he destroys people.
That's yeah, awesome. And is that the one with the thumb? It's like a He's got like buttons.
No, it's a regular mouse, just a two button.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah,
ball, like, you know, like a mechanical.
Yeah, with an actual ball underneath it. Yeah.
Wow, that brings me back.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the last time I used one. My God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Usually when I got mad, great. The ball ended up inside the mouse.
Right. You know, yes. Yeah, I think I've been there a few times for sure. But yeah, I went to QuakeCon in 2007, and some guy talked me into playing Quake 4 multiplayer, which, you know, just, you know, for whatever, you know, he just I didn't even get a frag. And I was like, he's all, hey, we'll play again. I'm like, no, dude, because he was across the table from me in the BYOC. And I'm like, no, dude, no. That's just, you know, that's not fun.
Yeah. It's like, I remember when Thresh came over to my house, and it was after a QuakeCon, and he had just won basically. And I had a 5 deathmatch setup at home on a LAN. And so Quake was basically running there. He got on there and he destroyed everybody. And we mostly never saw him. That's how good he was.
Wow. That's insane.
He basically teleported, like we're playing DM1, which like no one plays. But back then when Quake is just starting, you know, like people were playing DM1. And, sure. And so, you know, like what he did was like, he would just jump into a teleporter and just toss a ton of grenades out and just pop back in and go somewhere else. And like the grenades are killing everybody. He's not even there. You know, he's throwing grenades at you running away from the grenades he just tossed in. It's crazy. Wow. Yeah. He was so good. He destroyed all 4 of us. Just, it wasn't even fair. He's so good.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Thresh. Well, here's the thing. Now I'm jealous, not because like you created Doom and stuff, but now that you're having a LAN party this weekend. I'm really jealous.
I know.
I had him for years, and I have like a detached kind of garage in the back that's all finished off. And we put RJ45 in the walls.
Nice.
4 LAN parties. And I had, you know, scores and scores and scores over the year. But now my kids do it. You know, they've taken over and their buddies, they'll do it like once a year, but it's so crazy. It's such a different vibe when you're at a LAN, you know. It's so much fun. Very kind of like, you know the whole game jammy kind of feeling, the kind of thing. It's got that kind of vibe to it. But
yeah, where people spend the first hour just trying to get everything feeling right.
Yeah.
And back in the 90s, it was spending an hour getting the IPX drivers working.
I know. I remember I had a pretty decent job when Quake came out. So I built 2 identical, I think P133s or P166. I can't remember what it was, but it was that coax, nasty coax.
Oh, I know, with Terminators and shit.
Oh my God, it was horrible. It was horrible. Barely got it working. Once I got it working, it was party, you know. Oh yeah, BNC connectors. That's right.
Yeah.
But yeah, once we got it working, it was fun, and I could have like my buddy that I met on the Duango server would come over on his lunch break, and because I work nights, so he'd come over on his lunch break and we'd deathmatch for an hour, and then he'd bail and go back to work. But all those days, so beautiful things. But well. So I wanted to ask you about some, just a couple more funny kind of quakey things. I don't know if you've seen, Sandy Peterson has his YouTube channel now, and he's doing all kinds of goofy, crazy videos. They're good. Yeah. They're entertaining. And he talks about RPGs and his company. And he did have a quake one, and he talked about the giant zombie boss and the, that was going to be a boss, and you guys scaled up one of the zombies, or are you,
yeah,
and it just didn't work. So I kind of want to get your take on those things, but also he's alleging that you nerfed the Vorballs because they were too hard. Do you remember that? Do you know what he's talking about?
Are those a spawn?
Yeah, not the spawn, the Shalrath. Sorry, Shalrath. The spike balls that they shoot.
Yeah, they were so, like, you were dead slower. If they hit you.
Right. They were super slow, right?
They were fast originally, right. You know, and I believe, you know, like I used that as a boss in episode 2, E2, M6, mm-hmm. and I had two of them, I believe, on that level, you know, almost like Doom 1's double Baron of Hell attack.
Right.
And it was, having two of them shooting those balls out and the damage on those things, it was like, I like the damage of those, but the speed of it just made it like you just went this whole way. That level is long, mm-hmm. and you get to the end right there, and you just get instantly destroyed as soon as the Shalrath as soon as that's revealed, and they start shooting those purple spiky balls at you, and if you're not hidden behind that pillar or around the corner, you're dead, and you just went that whole way, and now you got to get the center rotation of that thing right, you know, to get across, because a lot of people don't know how to just rocket jump over there. So I had to nerf it some because it was slow it down, you know, it was just too much. With I wanted to have two of those guys in there because I knew that we were gonna, that was just gonna be a normal mini boss later, mm-hmm. so I wanted to make sure that it was like, well, still as a mini boss, it needs to be tough and not oh, I just heard a sound and I'm dead. You know,
right.
So yeah, that's what that was.
If you look back on all those Quake maps you made, what's the one, like, say, I'd say single player, because I'm assuming like TM3 is such a great map. I'm guessing that's your favorite DM map, but out of the single player maps, like, what is your kind of baby that you're like, yeah, it turned out, you know, the one that you love?
I'd say 5, Wizards of Mance. That one was
Mance. Yeah.
Yep. That one and 3, the Crypt of the K, the Wizard's Mance. I liked I liked it the most because of that triple, like the triple bridge in the center. That's kind of, you're going from one side of the castle to the other side of the castle, you know, multiple times. And then at the very end, you have this terrifying submerging in water, you know, I'm killing you basically, right. at the end, and terrifying the player about, you know, like they think they're gonna die because it's a really long trip and there's no way out of it, and then you come out and get healed up, but like terror.
Right. And then, I remember, you know, that
it was, that was for me, you know, in the little platform areas over the green sludge and stuff. I thought it would just had a lot of really fun stuff, and it was just like you had to be careful. It was almost, you know, not quite Tomb of Horrors for Quake, but it was like, mm-hmm. you know, a little bit scary in some places like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of twists and turns. You got a ton of secrets and guys kind of hiding, you know, ogres and stuff. It's funny. And last year I did very quickly, I did a kind of a remix of episode 2, map 4.
Oh, and, cool. Yeah. I like that one.
Dizzle Oble, I think. Yeah. So it was just one of
the Ebon Fortress. That's the Ebon Fortress.
Ebon Fortress. Right.
6 is Dismal. All
right. Right. So I did, What I did, I just took the map source and I kind of opened up some areas, and I have a mod that I've been working on, like a dev kit. So I added some things from that, you know, some features and things.
Cool.
And it was just kind of, you know, like I have, like at the very end, when you kill the fiends and the gate opens, when you shoot the three buttons.
Yeah. Three buttons.
What I did is I have a happy birthday kind of appear out of the wall. I have all this debris flying off collectibles and stuff. So it was just something I did over the weekend and really quickly. But then, so for this year, I looked at Wizard's Mance and I was like, oh shit, I should have started this like months ago. This would have been this, like, to do it right, because that one was kind of just down and dirty.
Yeah.
Just kind of a little different lighting and some kind of all alcoves with different monsters and things. I didn't change a whole lot, but. But this Wizard's Mance, I was going to, like, I'm going to do a cool remix and kind of add some new stuff. And I'm like, oh, God, this is going to take me forever. So maybe next year for 26, I'll get started earlier, right?
when I started Iron Storm, I remember when I came up with the idea of doing a speedrun challenge on E2M5, and I posted it on the Iron Storm site, and E2M5 was the map that I was like, my fastest was 1:05. I was like, all right, everybody, beat this. And people were beating it. And I couldn't believe the fastest player did it in 40 seconds.
Wow.
No way.
And the thing is, he avoided that whole underwater section by going to where the button is. You know, he had to get to that point where he could press the button, because that button press is an unlock for the last wall that's keeping you from the exit. He rocketed himself backwards off the button, got himself stuck in the door, took the damage, you know, like he jumped over the healths that were before it,
right,
took the damage, and then healed right up and just rocket jumped his way all the way through the exit.
Nice.
Yeah. That's great. Because I remember kind of playtesting that and getting my, I was like, what? I'm so terrible at this game. You got ogres and fiends all in this small little area. It's such a crazy. That's awesome though. That's a cool story. Well, RC, I don't want to dominate all this.
But no, you're fine. Honestly, I wanted to pipe in and just let John know, hey, we want to be respectful of your time here, because I know we're going over the half hour here. But I just got one more question for you here, if you don't mind.
Okay, and then I got to go right after that.
Yep, not a problem. So this should be an easy one, but you know, outside of Doom and Quake and other FPSs, I was curious, you know, what game or game series do you always find yourself going back to play?
Ghost Recon.
Ghost Recon's the one.
Yeah.
The OG or just the whole series?
Well, not the whole thing. Like, the original was amazing and still is super fun and terrifying, even though it's like really low res. Mm-hmm. But Breakpoint, I've been playing the hell out of Breakpoint. Wildlands is really fun, but Breakpoint is really it's so different than the arcadey feeling of Quake and Doom, Eternal and 2016 and all that stuff. It's totally, because it's tactical, it's totally different.
Right. And it's intense.
Yeah, especially if you play in immersive mode in Breakpoint, then you don't have a HUD anymore. And what you hear is what you know is around you, because there's no indicators for anything anymore. So it's real life. And that makes it really scary. It's the best. It's not a looter shooter anymore. You know, like, you go into immersive mode, it throws away looter shooter. It gets rid of most all HUDs that you would have for letting you know where anything is. And it makes it like you're really there. Like, you're like, if you walked out into a field, you wouldn't be able to see HUDs on what's around you. So
sure.
It's like that, you know, and you can't change your weapons. You're limited in all kinds of stuff. So it's like really real. It's pretty realistic and it's really fun. It's not like milsim realism, because then it's not fun, but you can, you know, heal yourself up with injections and stuff like that. But
I can only imagine, like, some of those little rovers, you know, like going up against those without some of the, you know, being able to know where they are and in the forest and around the hills. That'd be crazy.
It's awesome. Yeah.
I got to try that.
Yeah.
Cool. That's awesome.
Well, awesome, John. We want to thank you for your time, man.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. I really appreciate your time and, you know, keep making games and we'll be following you. And I did talk to Brenda on Twitter years ago about Galway, because my wife and I, you know, when we retire, we're going to get the, you know, hell out of California. So, you know, we might come say, hey, and, you know,
poke our heads in.
Yeah, dude. So thank you so much. We really appreciate your time.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
So a big thank you to John Romero for joining us on this episode. And also thank you to Brenda Romero, Saul Brox, and Rebecca for kind of making this interview kind of come together. So thank you all for your help on this. Also, thank you to Michael Markey for this fantastic theme music.
Yep, and like Dump Truck, I want to thank everybody as well. And I want to thank Dump Truck for having me back on the show here, too. It's been fun being back. I love it. And we'll see you all in the next Quakecast.